Welcome back to the New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, collecting all the socials on immigrants. We've got that story. Plus, if you're looking for Obama, you should probably check Wall Street. But first, the Chinese military has, for the first time, staged live fire drills at the country's first overseas base, opened recently in the Horn of Africa near the strategic Straits of Hormuz in Djibouti. Less than 2 months after inaugurating and deploying troops to China's first foreign naval military base abroad, People's Liberation Army Navy, PLA, held live fire drills for the first time in this East African location last Friday, South China Morning Post reported. Djibouti, on the Horn of Africa, strategically located in the entrance from the Indian Ocean to the Red Sea and lies at the gateway of the busy Suez Canal. It provides a port to neighboring landlocked Ethiopia and is considered one of the key Middle East energy choke points. Immediately after China wrapped up those drills, Japanese forces in the country began their own military exercises, reportedly practicing the protection of Japanese nationals abroad. The third drills of their kind, according to Japanese media, are taking place starting last Monday, September 25th, and runs all the way to October 2nd. James, there's lots of drills and lots of action going on all around the world, but now this is that first one of the real big forays into what I think we've talked about, if not extensively, at least somewhat consistently throughout New World Next Week, and that is what, here at least in the States, we would call AFRICOM. But that is the idea of the big boys getting into Africa with the military so that then you can pretty much soften it up for the banksters, right?
That's exactly right. And yes, I mean, Djibouti, obviously, a very strategic location, and of course the site of the newly opened PLA Navy base, which is now hosting these types of live fire exercises and other things besides. It's not surprising. This isn't a surprising story. This is the type of thing that happens at these bases, but it is a significant step. And there's also an interesting infographic, if people go into the article itself, that shows that there aren't just... it's not just the Chinese base, and it's not just that the Japanese are also running drills in Djibouti right now. It's that there are U.S., French, and several other countries with military bases and troop contingents stationed in the country. If you watched my recent video presentation on Echoes of World War I, you will know why Djibouti is so popular at the moment and what its strategic significance is and what that says about the bigger picture of U.S.-China rivalry. If you haven't yet watched that presentation, what are you doing? Pause this video and go watch it. But yes, this is just a sign of things to come and a sign that Africa is going to be more and more of an important and potentially dangerous area as these types of things increase and people start, some of these troops start bumping into each other in the crowded Bab al-Mandeb Strait.
Speaking of bumping into each other, it's hard to make moves on the grand chessboard without bumping into Heinz Kissinger. Quick related to this first story. Via the aforementioned South China Morning Post, Kissinger urges U.S. to bow to China and boost cooperation with Beijing on OBOR, One Belt, One Road. U.S. elder statesman tells a Columbia University conference the only alternative to positive relations between Washington and Beijing is, of course, global destruction. James, and you mentioned OBOR specifically in the Denmark talks, right?
Yep. This is exactly the way it's going to play out. The globalists are going to say, well, we don't want war, so we better have this global institutions, and you better get on board. Globalization, rah, 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 right, guys?
And we talked last week about, you know, the Trump train getting on board with international interventions. And as we reported, James, I'm pulling it off the top of my head, but we talked about Trump and Kissinger and all that at least probably a year ago here on New World Next Week, at least well before the big selections took place last fall here in the States. Speaking of big selections here in the States, we move to our second story this week as we head off to Bloomberg, where Hillary says in her new book, she made a mistake when she gave speeches on Wall Street after leaving government. Taking money from banks, she says in the book, created the impression she was in their pocket. Her old boss doesn't seem to share that same concern. Last month, just before her book What Happened was published, Barack Hussein Obama spoke in New York to clients of Northern Trust Corporation for about $400,000, a person familiar with his appearance said. Last week, he reminisced about the White House for the Carlyle Group, one of the world's biggest private equity firms, according to two people who were at that meeting. Next week, pretty much right now, he's going to give a speech at investment bank Cantor Fitzgerald's at their healthcare conference, of course. Obama is coming to Wall Street less than a year after leaving the White House, following a path that's well-trod and well-paid. He can't run for president, at least, again, as the current laws would have it. He continues to be an influential voice in a party torn between celebrating and vilifying corporate power. His new work with banks might suggest which side of the debate he'll be on and disappoint anyone expecting him to avoid a trap that snared Clinton. Or, as some of his executive friends see it, he's just a private citizen giving a few paid speeches to other successful people while writing his next book. James, the guy who wrote this article for Bloomberg, and if you hit the links, and again, everything we say will always be mentioned down in the show notes with links and sources. The guy who wrote the article has a quick interview on Bloomberg TV or something, and he basically talks about the existential crisis that the Democrats are having because they know that being bankster-connected sellouts, as they openly are, isn't going to win them anything, and it's the Elizabeth Warrens and the Bernie Sanders that are trying to pull the party away from their supposed, you know, to make them the real independents that they're acting like they are. So the other thing I would note in this group that he's not just, he's given some speeches, and you will definitely find, when you hit these links, a lot of people coming to defend the former president. He is actually giving away a bunch of this money to things in Chicago, and there's youth groups and after-school things, and he is donating a good chunk of some of this money, from what I can tell. The real takeaway for me, James, is he's not just speaking to groups here and there. I think he speaks to the Carlyle Group, which should make us think CIA, Iran-Contra. He's speaking to Cantor Fitzgerald, which should make us immediately think of 9/11. And he's speaking to Northern Trust. You should be thinking of bankster bailout, controlled economic demolition, the 2008 version. So he's not just speaking to some groups. He's speaking to all the most intimately connected bankster kind of old boys groups. And if I can in some ways stretch and make a Skull and Bones reference on this 322nd, 322 episode of New World next week, it's the Carlyle Group, it's James Baker, it's all those Bush Skull and Bones boys, in addition to all the other banksters and all the other crews. James, hope and change.
Yeah. I've been looking for that hope and change for a decade now, and I think I just found it. It's jingling in his pocket. Yeah, ka-ching. And of course, this is what happens. This is the way it goes now. The ex-presidents get their little speaking tour circuits and get their retirement nicely padded out and paid for. Not that they'll ever want for anything again in their lives, but, you know, just a new Ferrari for the garage or whatever. You know how it is. Yeah, this is not surprising, but I think you're right to point out that it's not just going to Wall Street and speaking to any banks. It's speaking to the heart of the banking establishment and the inside connected cronies. So, again, not really a surprise, but... And the other part of this, I think there's a bit of a psyop embedded in the article with that, oh, but he's giving $2 million away to underprivileged youth in Chicago's South Side or whatever. But the way they phrase it is very interesting. They say, part of the funds will go towards the funding of this $2 million or something. What does that mean? How much? How do they know this? I mean, where is this coming from? This sounds like PR more so than, you know, someone actually going and tracing the dollars and where they're flowing. So I don't know. That stinks to high heaven to me. It sounds like somebody's just trying to make some excuses for Obama and what he's doing. And at any rate, I think we all know what this is. It's just the speaking tour circuit. And the only problem with Hillary was that she got on board that circuit before she became president, and it got out to the press. Damn those meddling, pesky journalists trying to do their job.
That's it. Our third and final story this week, James, we head back here to the States, as everything seems to, again, as we talk about the phony baloney selections that we have every 4 and 8 years, where everybody kind of gets up in a furor about something, and we think these things happen over there. I think we've gotten back to an amazing bit of nationalism and tribalism, James, and I know that may sound like the Captain Obvious statement of the year, but just in each and every way, in each and every story, it seems like all the things that we used to know and all the research that we've put our time into, throw all that out the window because suddenly there's new people dancing around on stage. And we think that suddenly the agenda hasn't changed when we can document, at least in the, what, 7-8 years we've been doing New World Next Week, that all these dudes are liars, pretty much proven. So we'll take our last story from Gizmodo. As the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is expanding the kinds of information that it collects on those nasty immigrants to include social media information and search results. The new policy, which covers immigrants who have obtained a green card and even naturalized citizens, will take effect next month, October 18th. First spotted by BuzzFeed News, the announcement from the Trump regime, as Gizmodo calls it, because, you know, because the other guy was super awesome and was great and they loved him. They basically dumped this in the Federal Register. That's the place where we often find little governmental things that they just sort of let go and they are not very proud of and they're not pushing a bunch of public relations for. The new policy will not only allow the Department of Homeland Security to collect info about an immigrant's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook accounts, but it also mentions search results. It's not immediately clear if that means the agency will have access to things such as Google search histories, nor is it clear how that would be obtained. Gizmodo points out, and they include, of course, the whole list of all the sort of legalese speak and note the few things that make it that scary part in this vague sort of search results. Oh, we can collect up search results also as proof of what you might or might not be up to. James, this sounds like something they do in all those crazy other authoritarian countries like those crazies in North Korea or China, right?
Or Saudi Arabia, as we might get to. But yes, so this is, I think, related to the story that we saw developing earlier this year during the travel ban brouhaha, where they announced that part of the extreme vetting that they were going to start using for these countries on that list that Trump came out with was going to be collection of social media account handles and passwords and things like this. That, by April, had transmorphed into UK's nationals and other allies of the US, if they had been flagged for special vetting or if they were, you know, if they were given a special form, would have to give up their social media details. And now we have this, even naturalized citizens and green card holders. I mean, it's not immediately clear how related these are, but clearly it's of a cloth. They're starting to roll this out. And of course, as always, like everything, it's rolled out for the big, bad, scary turban boogeyman first. And then once you got their toe in the water, eventually, yeah, you're going to be giving up your social media passwords at the border. And once you do it in the US, well, you know, Japan will say, well, they're doing it in the US, so we'll do it here. And we all know how that story goes. And pretty soon it's standard practice all around the world, just like the fingerprints and digital photographs and all of that are becoming more and more common at borders around the world. It's just part of the indoctrination. Borders are the wonderful way, those imaginary lines on the map are the wonderful way to institute all of the police state measures first and get you trained into them like cattle.
I remember years ago reporting on Media Monarchy, again, just pulling it off the top of my head, the U.S. military generals talking about the testing and practicing of using the active denial systems, the sound wave cannons. They used all of that stuff overseas. And the general basically said, well, you know, we got to test it on these other people to make sure it's good enough to test on our own people. And indeed they did. And so we shouldn't be surprised when these things turn around and they're actually wheeled around and are meant for us. Oh, this big wall we built is keeping me in. James, yeah, that's the other big story coming out of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia to censor, monitor all internet chat apps. Via Mideast Eye, the Saudi government is lifting a ban on calls made through online apps, but will monitor and censor them. And it's basically WhatsApp and all the others that claim to have end-to-end encryption. And everybody says, well, then how are they going to do it? I would wonder if it might have something to do with that big magical orb that they all fired up in Saudi Arabia back in May. That wasn't just for a crazy occult show. It was to fire up the big, huge surveillance center with the banks and rows and rows and rows of computers. So that story, I think, in some ways buries the lead of they're also revoking the ban on women driving in Saudi Arabia. So that there's a lot of PR. There are a lot of, as you said, psyops going on. And as I said, James, you and I have been doing this show, New World Next Week again. I lose track, but this is, like I said, episode 322. And we have always been independent, non-commercial, alternative media. So again, we'll ask that you support our work And of course, we've got cryptocurrencies and Patreon and all the other ways that you can help support our work at our respective links. James?
That's it. All right, we'll leave it there. Talk to you again next week.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.